And the other thing, chaos. There's zero chaos. We are running. This is a fine-tuned machine.
Oh, my God. Imagine if it wasn't finely tuned.
Man.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's probably why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle.
Everywhere,
with you.
Everywhere.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM, People Powered Radio in LA, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker. All around very, very, very swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up shortly, almost 1 million signatures were delivered to Congress on a petition calling for the impeachment of Donald J. Trump on Thursday. Now, no matter what you think of that prospect, the idea that almost 1 million Americans have signed a petition calling for impeachment, not even 1 month into a presidency, that in and of itself is remarkable. But so too is the fact that just a week or so ago, I don't even know how long it was, a poll from Public Policy Polling, PPP, found that 46% of Americans right now would support impeachment of this president. Now, also 46 would oppose it, but the fact that 46% this early in a presidency support the idea of impeachment, that is unheard of. I'll be speaking momentarily to Norman Solomon, heading up the group organizing this impeachment effort at the moment, ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org. I'll be talking to Norman about that and about their reasons why they think that Trump should be impeached now and about much more. Also coming up today on the Bradcast, Desi Doyen. Hello.
Hey.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It is our 8th anniversary of the Green News Report. We are now heading into our 9th year of connecting the climate change dots over your public airwaves.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of amazing that it has been 8 years, but here we go into year number 9 with, as you might have guessed, a lot of green news today. So that's coming up shortly. Also, Donald Trump held his first solo press conference as president on Thursday to announce his new Labor Department nominee, Alex Acosta, the dean of Florida International University College of Law. Trump's original nominee, fast food executive Andrew Puzder, was forced to withdraw on Wednesday due to a whole bunch of controversies. Trump did not spend much time, frankly, on the new Labor Department nominee. He spent a lot more time, as you might imagine, talking about himself. Now, I didn't get to watch it live. Been trying to catch up with some of the clips that have been posted. I'll share a few of those in a second. But I spoke with my parents on the phone shortly after it finished, and they apparently watched the whole thing. They described it, and I'm quoting here, more than hour-long clown show. An embarrassment for the U.S. Well, gosh, now I am sorry that I missed it. But Desi Doyen, this goes to what we were discussing yesterday, how Donald Trump supporters are seeing this mess, this entire mess, very differently, frankly, from, you know, reality-based folks like you and me and some, at least, in the media. You heard from some of your relatives down in Texas.
Yes, my rabid right-wing Republican relatives. Yeah, they were ecstatic about it. In fact, one of them said, wow, he really took it to the press. He really, yeah, they were very excited about it.
This is like the two different realities that we seem to be living in right now.
He kicked butt, they said.
He kicked butt, huh?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so keep that in mind. Keep that point of view in mind as I play a couple of these clips and some reaction to it here. Trump said several times that I inherited a mess things are, you know, just terrible, and he's going to save us. He said, I don't think there's ever been a president in the time we've been elected that's done what we've done, bragging about the accomplishments that he's had in the first 3 weeks or so of his presidency. Well, I would agree with that. I don't think there's ever been a president who has done something like this in this amount of time. He also, of course, discussed his huge electoral victory. Huge, says Donald Trump. But he was finally called out on that by one of the journalists at the presser.
Very simply, you said today that you had the biggest electoral margin since Ronald Reagan with 304 or 306 electoral votes. In fact, President Obama got 365.
Well, I'm talking about the
president. President Obama, 332, and George H.W. Bush, 426. When he won as president. So why should Americans trust him?
Well, no, I was told, I was given that information. I don't know. I was just given. We had a very, very big margin.
I guess my question is, why should Americans trust you when you accuse the information they receive of being fake when you're providing information?
Well, I don't know. I was given that information. I've seen that information around. But it was a very substantial victory. Do you agree with that?
You're the president.
Okay, thank you. That's a good answer. Yes.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, you're the president. He's seen that information around. He has gone on and on and on to say what a huge electoral victory he's had. It's the largest in modern times. And then when he's called out on it, he said, well, I've seen that information around. That information is pretty easy to look up. You don't need insider information as the president of the United States to determine if your victory was the largest in recent electoral history. So good on that journalist. Good for him calling him out. It's a little hard to hear there, but he basically pointed out that Obama had a larger electoral victory. George H.W. Bush had a larger electoral victory. But I guess that was something that Trump hasn't had time to look up. He also attacked both the press time and time again, which, Des, I know your family enjoyed, and the folks inside his own administration, apparently, or the intelligence community, who keep leaking all of this stuff to the corporate media.
The first thing I thought of when I heard about it is, how does the press get this information that's classified? How do they do it? You know why? Because it's an illegal process, and the press should be ashamed of themselves.
So the press should be ashamed for doing their job of informing the American public. But he was furious. He went on and on in the clips that I saw, about just how outrageous and illegal these leaks were. And yet, he is arguably in office due to leaked information, the leaking, the hacking, the stealing,
indeed,
the posting of private emails from the DNC and from DNC Chair John Podesta and so on and so forth. And he lauded that. He was delighted about that. He did not say anyone should be ashamed of themselves for that. In fact, he wanted more. He said, hey, Russia, if you're listening, can you get those 33,000 Hillary emails and steal those and post those? So he didn't much care about the leaking of, I think his claim is that, oh, well, that wasn't classified. So I guess it's okay if it's not classified, it's okay to take stolen private information and post it online. Good to keep in mind. The reaction from Jake Tapper over at CNN, I thought was quite remarkable. So I'm going to play some of this at length because, you know, whatever you think of CNN, Jake Tapper has been very, very good on pressing Trump officials for, you know, to stick to actual facts and confirmable reality. So his reaction to this hour-long press conference by Donald Trump in the White House was kind of remarkable.
It was a wild press conference, and I think that, first of all, purportedly, the purpose of it was to introduce his new Secretary of Labor nominee, Alexander Acosta. He talked about Jim Acosta more than he talked about Alexander Acosta. He talked about Hillary Clinton more than he talked about Alexander Acosta. He spent the first part of his remarks talking about accomplishments that he thought the media, the fake media, whatever he wants to call us, were not paying enough attention to. But then, instead of focusing on these accomplishments and offering an optimistic, positive view of what he's doing for this country, it was an airing of grievances. It was Festivus. It was complaints about the media. At one point, he said, the leaks were real, but the news is fake, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. He said things that were not true. Peter Alexander from NBC pointed out one of them when he said he had the biggest electoral victory win since Ronald Reagan. That's not true. Clinton, Obama, George H.W. Bush all were bigger. But if you are a soldier in harm's way right now, if you are a hungry child in Appalachia or the inner city, if you are an unemployed worker in a hollow shell of a steel town, that's not a president who seemed rather focused on your particular needs and wants. That's a president focused on his bad press. It was unhinged, it was wild, and I can't believe that there are Republicans and on Capitol Hill and in the White House who don't understand. That might play well with the 44% of the population that voted for the president, but a lot of Americans are going to watch that press conference and think, that guy is not focused on me. I don't even know what he's focused on. How would you react if that were your boss coming in and giving a speech to the employees where you work? How would you react if that was somebody in your family that you were trying to have a conversation with? You would think the person is not dealing with the world in which we live. He said things that weren't true. He was called out by one reporter. You said you had the biggest electoral victory since Reagan. That's not true. And he said, well, somebody gave me that information. The buck stops there? Is that where we are with this presidency? You said it. Own the words. You were wrong. But it's not just about electoral votes. It's about the fact that he's still fixated on whether or not he legitimately won the presidency. President Trump, if you're watching, you're the president. You legitimately won the presidency. Now get to work and stop whining about it.
That was Jake Tapper of fake news outlet CNN. He said there that he can't believe that there are Republicans who view this in a positive light. Well, Des, your family shows there are still a lot of Republicans who view this in a positive light.
Most definitely. I mean, that's the 44% of supporters that Tapper was referring to. I think it is remarkable, though, when you look at congressional Republicans and Republicans in political positions around the country, that is remarkable to me, that there are very few, if any, of those people who are in actual power and in office who have anything to say about any of the remarkably bonkers stuff that he's saying. I mean, McCain has come out and said something.
And that's what I want to hit, because John McCain actually has begun to respond to some of this madness. Speaking to, I think this was to CNN, on Wednesday, on dysfunction at the White House, he says, obviously, we're in uncharted waters. We've never had a national security advisor lie, give false information to the vice president of the United States. I mean, we are in areas that, as I said before, are from a national security standpoint, we are dysfunctional, says Senator McCain. About what the White House needs to do to fix whatever mess he believes that they're in. He said, you've got to go through a regular process of decision making. You get somebody who is really well regarded as the new national security advisor, and you start the machinery running and don't, by the way, roll out again a refugee executive order that takes everybody by surprise. Regular process of decision making. That's what they're not doing. As I said before, who's making the decisions in the White House? Is it the 31-year-old? I guess he's talking about Jared Kushner there. Is it Mr. Bannon? Is it the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? I don't know. They need to clean up their act. That was John McCain, Republican Senator John McCain, talking about this White House. Donald Trump also sees it very differently. He thinks that things are going swimmingly.
I turn on the TV, open the newspapers, and I see stories of chaos. Chaos. Yet it is the exact opposite. This administration is running like a fine-tuned machine.
Well, there you go. This is a fine-tuned machine. Okie dokie, then. our old friend David Edwards over at Raw Story, David used to work with us at bradblog.com, posted kind of a remarkable response to this fine-tuned machine. At Raw Story, he said, he reported U.S. national security officials are reportedly ready to go nuclear after President Donald Trump's latest attack on the intelligence community. In a series of tweets on Tuesday and Wednesday, Trump insisted that the real scandal was not that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn lied about his contacts with Russia. Instead, the president blasted what he said were un-American leaks that led to Flynn's ousting. Among the tweets that Trump has put out there over the last day or two, the real story here is why there are so many illegal leaks coming out of Washington. Will these leaks be happening as I deal on North Korea, etc.? Well, in that case, I don't even know that we need the leaks, because he was apparently talking about North Korea in the middle of dinner at Mar-a-Lago and everyone saw it. He tweeted, information is being illegally given to the failing New York Times and Washington Post by the intelligence community, NSA and FBI, just like Russia. Don't know what he means by just like Russia, but that's what he said. The real scandal here, he reiterated, is that classified information is illegally given out by intelligence like candy. Very un-American! Exclamation. Actually, it's kind of American. We have a great history of leaks, including from the intelligence community. In any event, on Wednesday, former NSA intelligence analyst John Schindler offered some unique insight and reaction from the national security community, from the intelligence community. He tweeted, U.S. intelligence is not the problem here. The president's collusion with Russian intelligence is... Many details, but the essence is simpler. Simple, he tweeted. He said, now we go nuclear. Really? Now we go nuclear, he wrote on Twitter. The intelligence community war is going to new levels. Just got an email from senior intelligence community friend. It began, quote, he will die in jail.
Oh, hello.
Well, hello indeed. I don't know if he will die in jail or not. But he might be impeached, and sooner than many people think. And that story is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Hey, it's Brad, and you're listening to the broadcast on Radio Sputnik. Oh, that old chestnut. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thanks for dusting off that old Neil Young impeachment song. Well, speaking of press conferences, and I suspect press conferences that received far less coverage in D.C. than did Donald Trump's insane press conference. Well, let's start here. The Washington Post headline on Wednesday, as White House chaos grows, Trump is a boon for business in Britain's betting houses. Thrill-seeking gamesters in Britain, the Washington Post reports, can toss down money on anything political, from whether Donald Trump will visit Russia before the end of the year to if he will win the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize. By the way, there are 100-to-1 odds on that. The main bet, however, as Alex Donahue, from the British betting website Ladbrokes, told the Post, would be on impeachment, or if Donald Trump will finish his term. And most bettors seem to be placing their hard-earned money on the idea that he will, in fact, be impeached. Currently, Ladbrokes offers an even payout on that happening, 1-to-1 odds, in other words. So if you bet $1 on Trump impeachment and it's proven correct, you receive just $2 back. That's how close the odds are. And the paper reports many people are betting on that. We face a six-figure payout should the Donald resign or find himself impeached before the end of his first term. The Ladbrokes spokesman told the Post, simply put, British bettors do not trust Trump as far as they could throw him, and they're willing to stake hefty amounts of money on him failing. And indeed, one can watch these shifts occurring in real time in the odds, according to the paper. When the interview with Ladbrokes spokesman began, the Post reports, the payout, if Trump were impeached, was 11-to-10, but by the time he said cheers, it was an even 1-to-1 odds. One explanation, they say, was for the shift is likely the burgeoning Michael Flynn scandal. Well, that's fun. But is impeachment of this president in this country, in a Republican-controlled House and Senate right now, even fathomable? My guest today, I believe, will argue that it is. Less than 1 month since Donald Trump took office, the groups Free Speech for People and RootsAction.org announced on Thursday at the National Press Club in a press conference that they are delivering a petition with more than 870,000 signatures to Congress, calling on the House of Representatives to initiate an impeachment investigation into what the groups describe as President Trump's corrupt business dealings, including violations of the U.S. Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause and Domestic Emoluments Clause, and other federal laws. The groups have set up a website to support this effort at impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org. And here to talk about impeaching Donald Trump now, as incredible as it may seem, not even a full month into a presidency, is Norm Solomon, who spoke today at the press conference. He is a journalist, media critic, and the national coordinator for the online activist group RootsAction.org, which is co-sponsoring this effort. He's also the founder and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, a consortium of policy researchers and analysts, and the author of a dozen books, including War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Norm Solomon, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Oh, glad to be with you, Brett.
It has been many years since we have spoken, so I'm glad to have you on today. Given the fact, by the way, that Trump held his own presser to announce his new Labor Department nominee on Thursday, after the last one crashed and burned over the past 24 hours, was there any available press left to show up at your press conference in D.C., also in D.C., just an hour or two earlier?
Yeah, we had some press there, including Australian Broadcasting Network, AFP, the huge Agence France-Presse was there, and a few other journalists. We also were able to go over in the afternoon to the office of the new Congressman Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Maryland, who very graciously met us at his office and took the petition with the 870,000 signers who you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's been a good day. This is a very long process, but not as long as many people think. This could be a lot quicker than we might have imagined just a few weeks ago.
Which is kind of incredible to even ponder. Actually, when I had seen your effort a week or so ago, I thought, well, you know what? I'll have Norm on and I'll give him hell about this because it seems just such a reach, if, you know, in a this early in a presidency. But just a few days later, maybe it's not such a reach. All right, let's go in a nutshell then, and that might be a key word here to describe this presidency. Your case for impeachment, based on the foreign and domestic emolument clauses, among others. So let's hit both of those quickly. The foreign clause, I'll just read it here. No person holding any office or profit or trust under the United States shall, without the consent of the Congress, except of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind, whatever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. How do you believe that, in your groups, believe that Donald Trump has violated the foreign emolument clause?
Well, on the merits, we're actually not moving really fast on this. We're almost a month behind because, as with the domestic emoluments clause, the one that you just read, took effect the moment that Donald Trump became president. So on inauguration day at about 12:01 p.m. D.C. time, he was in violation of both clauses of the Constitution. When it gets to the foreign emoluments, he has so many investments. The Trump Organization is so invested in many, many different countries, including Saudi Arabia, where he has not in any way divested. You know, he should have, and experts are pretty unanimous on this, legal and financial experts, he should have engaged between Election Day and Inauguration Day in a blind trust. His trust is 2020. It's not blind at all. He knows exactly what he owns, and the conflicts of interest are huge. So he has a couple of buildings in Turkey, for instance, where, again, U.S. policy has everything to do with his profit and loss. This is exactly what the founders were trying to prevent with the emoluments clauses. And so, really, it's not controversial among constitutional scholars and others who know the history of how these provisions of the Constitution were put together.
Can an argument be made? No, so what you're basically saying is, like, these buildings you mentioned, are they state-owned buildings or state-owned businesses in Saudi Arabia, in Turkey, and so forth, and the profits from those go to Donald Trump in some fashion, and that makes it an emolument from a foreign state? Is that it in a nutshell?
Well, yes. The governments have everything to do with the regulations, the taxes, the permissions. They decide all sorts of stuff that directly affects how much money goes to or doesn't go to the Trump Organization and to Trump personally. And when we move over to the domestic issues as well, you know, you don't have to walk very far from the White House to the new Trump Hotel, which is in a financial relationship with the U.S. Postal Service and U.S. government. Mm-hmm. And again, we haven't quite gotten to this, but we may as well. The U.S. government and every one of the 50 states, according to the Domestic Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, again, the president is not allowed to get any profit whatsoever, emoluments in the verbiage of the time, mm-hmm. From relationships with any of those governmental entities inside our own country. So, you know, this is a president who said that there can't be a presidential conflict of interest. If you're president, you can't have a conflict of interest, which is reminiscent of what Richard Nixon said, if the president does it, it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. Well, we know where that ended up.
Well, we do. But the idea that when he says, and far be it for me to defend Donald Trump in any way, shape, or form, but when he says that the president can have conflicts of interest, he's talking about the idea that a lot of these conflict of interest laws apply to federal officials, but apparently not to the president. So keeping that
in
mind,
that would be a very, very tough argument to make. And in fact, the Stock Act, mm-hmm. That was passed in 2012, to stop trading on inside information, essentially, explicitly mentions the president. And I should say that the Domestic Emoluments Clause of the Constitution is explicitly, according to the Constitution, not waivable by Congress. He doesn't get a pass because he's president or Republicans of his party, most party majority, like him and say, okay, you get to break the rules or we'll change the rules. It's just not allowed. So I think, Brad, an underlying question is the president above the law? Do we want to have a president who can violate with impunity the supreme law of the land, which is what the U.S. Constitution calls itself?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, we don't want that, or I don't want that, you don't want that, but I also want to make sure that if a case is brought, the argument for an impeachment, that it's on solid ground. And I'm glad you mentioned the domestic versus the foreign clauses here, because in the foreign clause, you're right, it does say, without the consent of the Congress, the president may not accept, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't say that on the domestic side. Can an argument be made, Norman Solomon, that Congress has given its consent by not doing anything, by not demanding he release his tax returns, that they are giving their consent here?
No, tax returns have nothing to do with it. As you know, it's clear in the Constitution that that option for the Congress to waive the provision is not at all applicable to the domestic emolument. So he's stuck, and Congress is stuck. A lot of people, initial response, and I, frankly, a few weeks ago when I heard about impeachment talk, mm-hmm. I agreed with this idea, which I think is wrong, that, well, it's a Republican Congress, so they're just not going to impeach. And I went back and looked at what happened with the House Judiciary Committee in 1974. There were seven different Republicans on that committee who voted to impeach Richard Nixon, and that was pivotal. That's why he resigned, because he saw the writing on the wall. This is why I get to the precept, which I think is so crucial, and I know you've talked about this mm-hmm. on the program so often, that when people lead, the leaders will follow. When the grassroots is activated and organized, then people in Congress may be the last to know what's going to happen, because it comes from us. And that's where I think organizing is so crucial. That's why at ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org, we do have those 870,000 signers, and they're all zip-coded, and we know every congressional district that they live in. And we're launching phase two, while the petition continues, to have a fire lit under dozens and dozens and ultimately hundreds of members of Congress to say, hey, there is a need for a impeachment resolution. You need to sponsor it. You need to vote for it. Let's get this show on the road.
And, of course, impeachment is a political act. You have to have, you know, the political energy behind it, whether it's the Republicans who control this or Democrat. There is a way, actually, to bring articles of impeachment. It was done back in during the Bush era. And by way of full disclosure, well, Dennis Kucinich brought articles of impeachment against George W. Bush, and I think that was during a Republican Congress as well. But he was able to actually file those articles by way of transparency here for myself. I was asked to help draft some of those articles regarding concerns about election malfeasance in the case of Bush. But ultimately, those articles... they were ignored by the rest of Congress at the time. They were tabled by the Judiciary Committee, as I recall. But even without Republicans who control Congress doing this on their own, there is a way for Democrats, if they're interested, to introduce these articles, is there not?
Yes, that can be done. We're anticipating that it will be done. There are many in Congress who are Democrats who are behind the scenes talking about who should do it, when it should happen, and there's been a step in that direction. Gerald Nadler, Democratic congressperson from the city of New York, about a week ago introduced a resolution of inquiry, as it's known, which is not a resolution for impeachment, but it's widely seen and I think is a step in that direction in this case. He wants the Congress to ask formally the Attorney General to come forward with all sorts of information, and the resolution, which is just a few pages, dwells mostly on the financial conflicts of interest, and the resolution mentions the emoluments clause, a foreign one in that case, and it's very important because when that gets rolling, then the genie gets out of the bottle in a sense, and it is groundwork towards impeachment, I believe.
Is this, as you describe it as groundwork, is it basically trying to till the soil here for an eventual impeachment after Democrats maybe somehow regain power in 2018, which is already a long shot as is? But is that what this is meant to be? Or are you guys saying this guy should be impeached right now for these reasons, period?
Oh, it's definitely the latter. Nobody, at least in our campaign, ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org, is saying we should wait until the midterm elections. The Constitution's already being violated every day when Trump gets up in the White House or Mar-a-Lago or some tower somewhere. He's violating it anew, and that shouldn't be tolerable. You know, it's such a dangerous precedent to have a president willfully, flagrantly violating the Constitution. Because if we shrug and say, well, we don't think it's practical, or we don't like the result of the vice president becoming president, then we've bought further into what, frankly, is moving towards dictatorship. If we say this is okay, that the president is above the supreme law of the land, then that opens the floodgates to autocracy and the antithesis of democracy.
Well, since you bring this up, I wanted to ask you about this. If, in fact, a case of a successful impeachment and trial in the Senate was brought forward, and people need to understand an impeachment is really just an investigation. It doesn't remove the president. I think a lot of people think when a president is impeached, they got to leave office. No, they don't. If you remember what happened with Bill Clinton, they had an impeachment investigation in the House. The Republican-controlled House voted to send it to the Senate, where there was an actual trial, and they were not successful in removing Bill Clinton in that Senate trial. But if all of this was successful, if there was impeachment in the House, if there it went to the Senate, and somehow the president was removed via a trial there, or if he just resigned, then yeah, Vice President Mike Pence becomes the president. Isn't he much more of a danger? I know you're a very progressive guy, Norman, anti-war, a lot of books on, you know, for years on this. Isn't he more of a threat in one sense, arguably, to progressivism than Donald Trump?
That is the single most frequently asked question that we get in the Impeach Donald Trump Now campaign. And the answers, I think, come in two separate complementary categories. And by the way, if people go to the site under frequently asked questions, you'll see it addressed at ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org. The first layer is, one that I was just referring to, and that's a matter of the Constitution and a constitutional government. If we don't want to have either, then we just say, oh, well, let it slide, because our calculus tells us it wouldn't be any better with the vice president moving into the Oval Office. But that's extremely dangerous, because once the Constitution is a dead letter, then what we fear most is going to come into being, which is a lawless government, and the last person you want to be above the law is the most powerful person in the government. So there's that level. We just cannot let this go by. But another level, which has so many political dimensions, has to do with, is it true that leaving Trump in place is better than getting rid of him and having President Pence? And while nobody has a crystal ball, I think it's much worse to leave in place somebody who would then be a de facto dictator than to decimate the Republican Party, have the Republicans back on their heels, and have Pence in the Oval Office with a splintered Republican Party behind him. People forget, Brad, that the only way for Donald Trump to be removed from office here in the next couple of years is if at least 25 Republicans in the House and at least 19 senators, because to convict the Senate requires a two-thirds majority, mm-hmm. 19 Republican senators to vote to boot this guy out of the White House. Can you imagine what that would do to the Republican Party? There are many on Capitol Hill, some anyway, and certainly many tens of millions of Republicans who, hard to fathom, love Donald Trump. And if Republican leadership, many of them on Capitol Hill, vote to get rid of the guy, then what it is going to do to the Republican Party would make it look like a picnic, what happened in 1974 when what they called the Watergate class came in during that midterm election, Democrats who just rolled into town because the Republicans were so far back on their heels. So I think it's, from a political standpoint, a delicious prospect to imagine Donald Trump constitutionally being kicked out of the White House.
Well, to get to that delicious prospect, you're going to have to, obviously, as you mentioned, Norm, get at least some Republicans on board. You mentioned a couple of Democrats who at least have taken this petition, 800 and almost a million signatures here. We're not even a month into this presidency, already a million signatures for impeachment. So you mentioned some Democrats and Nadler introducing his measure, which is said to be the first step towards impeachment. Any word whatsoever from any Republican in the House, in the Senate, anywhere else that they have any type of interest in even exploring the idea of impeachment?
Well, if you Google impeach Trump, you'll see that I think it's a former judge from Ohio who's Republican is talking about it. There's certainly some murmurings behind the scenes. Frankly, I'm most concerned at this stage overwhelmingly about Democrats, because as you know full well, Nancy Pelosi was very good at, as she said, taking impeachment off the table.
Off the table, yep, yep.
And even when there's very strong grounds to proceed at least into the impeachment resolution stage and open investigation, she slammed the door. And I think this is a huge disconnect. Not by far the first time we've seen it. I'm sure you've been talking about it a lot on the program lately and for a long time, I know. When there's a divide in the country and Capitol Hill is almost unanimous, which is exactly what's happening now. The latest poll, public policy polling survey from last week, shows a 46 to 46% divide of the entire country of registered voters. Do you support the impeachment of President Trump? And 46% each saying support and oppose. That is stunning. Yep. Compared to what is on Capitol Hill, where it is 100% to 0% are willing to talk about supporting impeachment. 0% are saying they're supporting outright impeachment. So we have a long way to go to bring into alignment the support on Capitol Hill compared to the support at the grassroots.
And that's a really good point. And you're right. We did talk about that poll a few days ago. Seems like a few years ago, but a few days ago, that, yeah, when you've got half the country essentially would support impeachment this early in a presidency. That's kind of amazing. I got just a minute or two here left, Norman. Do you, you know, some Republicans in Congress have, while they seem to be ignoring all of these conflicts of interest and the emoluments clauses, and they won't even call for him to release his tax returns because they could force that in Congress, the Republicans don't seem to care. But some of them, a few anyway, have expressed concerns about Trump as part of this anti-Russia fever, despite the lack of at least public evidence so far of wrongdoing. But do you suspect that that will ultimately be a more viable foot in the door, at least for some of these Republicans, when it comes to an impeachment inquiry?
Well, politically, Trump can find himself easily in a vice from several different directions where he's under attack and being pressured and having politicians actually want him impeached for a variety of reasons. And, you know, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, they're furious in making that clear because Trump doesn't want to militarily escalate against Russia. And I think this is a big danger that some Democrats are attacking Trump over the top for extreme or with extreme rhetoric for reasons that could, if we pursue that line of reasoning from Democrats, grievously escalate the Cold War. So I think the Democratic Party has a problem at the top where there are some indiscriminate attacks that need to be subjected to cooler heads, because we do not want an escalation of military conflict with a country that has millions of troops like we do and has thousands of nuclear weapons pointed at us and vice versa. That is not a good policy to pursue for confrontation.
I couldn't agree more. That's a message I'd love to see the Democrats start paying attention to as well. What's the next step here? How can people take part or help in the ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org effort?
Well, at the site, we have a model resolution that people can take to their city councils, county commissions, state legislatures, and so forth. And, fittingly, President's Day recess is just coming up. And next week, in our home districts, there's going to be town halls and meetings across the country with members of Congress, and that's a good time to push those people who supposedly represent us. It's time for impeachment.
Norman Solomon, journalist, media critic, and national coordinator for the online activist group RootsAction.org, leading the charge on the ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org campaign. You can check out both of those websites, RootsAction.org and ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org, but also on the Twitters, you guys are ImpeachDTNow. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. Norman Solomon, great talking to you, my friend. Let's do this more often in the future, and good luck. You're going to need it out there.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you, Brad.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, we begin year number 9 of the Green News Report after this break. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Hey, this is Brad, and you're listening to the Bradcast on Radio Sputnik. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Got we'll see if I have time. I wanted to get to some listener mail here after our Green News Report. And it's a big one. Our 8th anniversary.
Yay.
Of whatever we do on our Green News Report. Let's get right to it.
It's a priority for the Trump administration to fix our broken regulatory system.
Trump repeals anti-corruption regulation for the fossil fuel industry.
Crews are still cleaning up after a major oil pipeline was struck, spilling oil across a highway in Collin County.
From the folks bringing you the Dakota Access Pipeline, another major spill. Good news for breathers, bad news for coal miners in Arizona. U.S. emissions still declining, plus...
These are really badly contaminated.
Scientists discover man-made toxic chemicals in the deepest part of the ocean.
All of those disturbing discoveries and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Better to get your news directly from the president. In fact, it might be the only way to get the unvarnished truth.
Just for the record, that's the chairman of the U.S. House Science Committee. We're screwed. This is your Green News Report.
I
Okay, Desi Doyen, before we get started, I just want to note that we are now heading into our 9th year of the Green News Report. We have been doing this for 8 years. And my thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue to connect the climate change dots.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. Now, on to the news. A big win on Wednesday for the fossil fuel industry. President Trump signed a repeal of an anti-corruption measure in the Dodd-Frank banking oversight law that would have required U.S. oil companies to disclose to the Securities and Exchange Commission any payments that they make to foreign governments for drilling and mining rights. It was similar to provisions in the EU, created in part to help citizens in developing nations fight government corruption, bribery, and tax evasion. Fast repeal of that anti-corruption provision was a big priority for the fossil fuel industry and Republicans. New U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson personally lobbied against it back when he was ExxonMobil CEO. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer painted the repeal as crucial for small business.
Misguided federal regulations such as the SEC rule inflict real cost on the American people and put our businesses, especially small businesses, at a significant disadvantage.
Because, you know, ExxonMobil is a small business. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe this week filed a new court challenge to the Dakota Access Pipeline to overturn the Army Corps of Engineers' sudden approval of a final permit as ordered by the Trump administration. Now, in a story that got buried when it happened, that Trump order, it came just days after yet another major pipeline rupture, this time near Dallas, Texas. Struck by construction equipment, the high-pressure pipeline spilled 600,000 gallons of crude oil. It was the second spill on that new one-year-old pipeline.
And I want to underscore that. This pipeline began operation in mid-2016. It has already spilled twice, but no need to worry about that. Same company and their Dakota Access Pipeline. I'm sure it'll all be fine.
Meanwhile, man-made toxic chemicals have contaminated even the deepest reaches of the ocean. According to a new study, tiny shrimp-like animals collected deep in the Pacific Ocean's Mariana Trench, 7 miles below the surface, are heavily contaminated with man-made chemicals like PCBs at levels similar to the most polluted waterways in the world. In an interview with NPR, biologist Alan Jameson said they were shocked at their findings.
Every sample we had had contaminants in it at very high or extraordinarily high levels.
PCBs were banned decades ago, but persist in the environment and may have been absorbed by plastic pollution in the ocean that settled to the bottom.
At high levels, 7 miles below the surface of the ocean.
Yep.
Wow.
Good news for breathers in Arizona. The Navajo Generating Station coal-fired power plant in northern Arizona, one of the biggest polluters in the nation, will close in 2 years, its owners announced this week, because cheap natural gas has made it unprofitable to run. That's bad news, however, for more than 900 coal mine and power plant workers. Tribal environmental activists with the Navajo Nation are pushing their leaders and state officials to develop renewable energy projects to create new jobs.
Like solar energy?
Well, they do have that in Arizona.
There is a little bit of sun out there.
Finally, some good news. Despite a rise in economic and industrial growth in the U.S., U.S. annual emissions of greenhouse gases have continued to drop a little, declining a little more than 2% over 2015, according to the latest data. The EPA says more electric utilities are switching away from coal to cleaner-burning natural gas, plus a decrease in electricity demand thanks to energy efficiency and warmer winter temperatures, reducing heating demand. Annual U.S. emissions have declined 11% below 2005 levels.
Well, we'll turn that around soon enough. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Once again, our thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help the Green News Report stay on the air for what will now be our 9th year. Boy, oh boy, thank you very much, Desi, I think. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Soak up the sun. I got my 45 on, so I can rock on.
A
back on, Desi Doyen. Happy anniversary.
Thank you, you too. Looks like we're going to have plenty of work ahead because the Senate has passed a procedural vote to send Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to the full Senate for confirmation, and it looks like he will sail through.
But I saw that Susan Collins, Susan Collins, Republican, was going to vote against him.
She was, but it looks like Manchin, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, a Democrat, and Heidi Heitkamp from South Dakota, also a Democrat, are going to vote for Pruitt.
Fantastic. Can always count on the Democrats to come through for the Republicans. Very quickly before we go here, some listener mail to bradcast@bradblog.com from Ginger in Massachusetts. She says, "Hi, Brad and Desi. I would like to humbly disagree with what you said in your recent broadcast concerning the Logan Act and concerns that Mike Flynn might have violated that by talking with the Russian ambassador before the inauguration about the sanctions that President Obama was putting on Russia. I noted a couple of days ago, I described actually how the Logan Act works or doesn't in this case, and that I didn't think it was, even if it was a violation of the Logan Act, that it's a ridiculous law that has never been prosecuted, et cetera. In any event, so... Ginger writes, I believe there's good reason to make it illegal for private citizens to negotiate foreign policy on the expectations of an incoming president. I feel that Ronald Reagan's team should have been subject to the Logan Act for negotiating the arms for hostages deal with Iran before Reagan was sworn in as president. If his team hadn't been negotiating this deal, it's possible Jimmy Carter would have been able to negotiate the hostages release before the election and thereby might have won the election. I believe that the discussions Flynn had with the Russian foreign minister was also a matter of trading a new U.S. no sanctions policy, which Russia wanted, for the Russians' help in getting Trump elected, which Trump wanted. Now, a couple of quick points there. First, in the case of what Ronald Reagan's team reportedly did in trying to forestall the release of the Iranian hostages, and as I noted when I talked about the Logan Act, it's one thing if you're actually stopping or blocking an actual policy, in this case, you know, the release of American hostages. Yeah, that would be one thing. I don't know that the Logan Act would have done the trick in holding someone accountable for that, but that's actually stopping or preventing the U.S. from carrying out a policy. In the case of the sanctions against Russia, Obama was able to institute those sanctions. And actually, they are still in place, as far as I know. And here you had an incoming White House talking to, a foreign counterpart, essentially, about what they planned to do when they got in. He didn't actually, as far as we know, Michael Flynn did not actually stop any policy of the U.S. That's one point. Ginger notes that there was a trade-off here, that he wanted Russia wanted no sanctions and that Trump wanted help on the election. Well, this conversation that we're talking about, at least right now, with concerning Michael Flynn, was after the elections. This was on December 29, 2016. So Ginger goes on to say, I don't believe Russians were actually involved in hacking voting machines, though they could have indirectly provided training for local U.S. hackers. Well, sure, I could have provided that. But apparently they were involved in trying to discredit Hillary and the DNC, which benefited Trump. Now, that's also only apparently. There has been no evidence on either of those points. The story would change drastically, I suppose, if Trump's team was somehow proven to be undermining our voting machines, or even if there was evidence presented that Russia had anything to do with the so-called hacks of DNC emails. Right now, we don't have that evidence. That doesn't necessarily mean that the team Trump himself had anything to do with it either, by the way, even if that evidence was presented. So again, nothing to do with the Logan Act. She writes, I also don't happen to believe that whatever Flynn said or promised to the Russian ambassador was on his own private initiative. So I personally believe that Trump himself or his close henchmen were guilty of breaking the law, i.e. the Logan Act, since they did all that before getting elected and before being sworn in. Well, for the record, the former U.S. ambassador to Russia and Obama's top Russia advisor Michael McFaul met with Russian diplomats in 2008 before the election himself, before Obama's election, in person. So was that a violation of the Logan Act? So a lot of this is being used to damage Trump by some sympathetic Democrats or folks who just don't like Trump. I don't like him either. But these are very serious charges and they require serious evidence. And leaning, frankly, on a law like the Logan Act that even Democrats admit Flynn likely did not violate, and or that it's not even prosecutable. That law has serious constitutional issues and probably would not hold up in a court of law. Remember, it was enacted in the 1790s and has never been actually prosecuted and tested in court. Anyway, that's just my response. Ginger says, all the above is in addition to whatever Trump and his team have done to compromise U.S. independence by leaving our officials open to blackmail. On that point, I agree. Thank you, Ginger. You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at TheBradBlog. My thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, to Norman Solomon of Roots Action, and ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org. Angie Coiro will be sitting in for us on the next thrilling episode of the Bradcast. So until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.